Welcome to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff. Peter Phillips has the day off. Today's program is all about Banned Books Week. Yes, it's Banned Books Week, a week every year for over 30 years, where we focus on the right to read and the right to know, and we oppose issues of censorship. Today's guests include Emily Knox, an assistant professor at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, author of Book Banning in 21st Century America. We are also joined by James LaRue. He is the new director of the American Library Association's Office for Intellectual Freedom. We'll be talking about Banned Books Week with our guests later in the program. We'll be joined by James Taggart. He is working with PEN America. He is their Free Expression Programs Manager. Stay with us for an hour on Banned Books Week.
Created by the criminal minds, political ties, habitual eyes, alibis, disguise, another guise of democracy, politics, and the apocalypse. Got the skies like an ominous.
Welcome to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff. Today's program, we focus for the hour on Banned Books Week, the annual celebration of the freedom to read, which is between September 25th and runs through October 1st. Hundreds of libraries, bookstores, schools, and communities across the country host events that celebrate free and open access to all literature, even those considered unorthodox or unpopular. And this year, the National Coalition for Banned Books Week is highlighting diversity. You can learn more about Banned Books Week at bannedbooksweek.org. Our guests for today include Emily Knox. Emily's an assistant professor in the School of Information Sciences at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Her research interests include information access, intellectual freedom and censorship, information ethics and information policy, as well as the intersection of print culture and reading practices. Emily was awarded the Illinois Library Association Intellectual Freedom Award, was named a Wise Instructor of the Year in 2015. She is on the board of the Freedom to Read Foundation. Emily Knox, welcome to the Project Censored Show.
Hi.
We're also joined by James LaRue. James LaRue is the new director of the American Library Association's Office for Intellectual Freedom and the Freedom to Read Foundation. James LaRue has appeared on NPR, been quoted and highlighted in the Wall Street Journal, Forbes, Denver Post. He's hosted a local author interview TV program as well. A newspaper columnist for a quarter century, he also wrote The New Inquisition, Understanding and Managing Intellectual Freedom Challenges from 2007. He was a director of the Douglas County Library between 1990 and 2014, which was widely known as one of the most successful and innovative public libraries in the nation. He was the Colorado Librarian of the Year in 1998, and this year, 2016, he began his position with the American Library Association. James LaRue, welcome to the Project
Center. Thank you so much. That's a really long introduction, but I appreciate that.
James LaRue, tell us a little bit about the history of Banned Books Week over 30 years now.
Well, this started back around 1982, and there was a book festival that was going on in Anaheim, California, and someone got the bright idea of rounding up some of the books that were being frequently challenged, and I'll get to what challenge and banned means in just a moment. And they put them kind of in a cage in the middle of this exhibit hall, and it attracted such attention, they said, you know, we got a good gimmick on our hands here. Let's start rounding up all of these challenged authors and really point out that there are people in America who don't want you to read them. So since then, there has been this annual event that probably gets more attention than almost anything American Library Association does, to say we are protecting your freedom to read, your First Amendment rights. And so every year we have a chance to talk about what America is nervous about these days.
This year's theme is diversity, so apparently there must be some nervousness going on around diversity. Could you talk about that?
Yeah, there sure is. The Office for Intellectual Freedom receives these challenges, which are formal attempts to remove books from libraries. From the people that are trying to defend those books, or we see read them in the newspaper, or we see them on the web, and we kind of just collect all this data. And so one of the things that we have noticed is that for probably the past 20 years, maybe half of those books were challenged because they were by diverse authors or about diverse content. And in 2015, we noticed that 9 out of the top 10 were about diverse issues. And by diverse, I mean people of color, LGBT, disabled in some fashion, or a minority cultural or religious community. 9 out of 10 really means that something is going on here in America.
Indeed it is. And Emily Knox, let's bring you in. And what can you add to what James LaRue is saying about this year's theme for Banned Books Week, diversity?
This is something that I've just started a little bit of research on, looking at the books that have been challenged recently. And what I'm really interested in is why these books are being challenged. And it looks like, in some ways, the books are being challenged because they are diverse, right? They're being challenged because they're about bisexuality or they're about racism. And of course, this is intrinsic to being a diverse book. And I hope to explore this more as I go through my research on this.
You are author of a book that's titled Book Banning in the 21st Century, Roman Littlefield book from 2015. Tell us a little bit about that. What does book banning look like in the 21st century?
The cases that I look at are really about challenges. So we haven't gotten to the difference between that. But a book challenge is when someone asks for a book be restricted, removed, or relocated. And I look at the reasons why people ask for this. And I'm really interested in what people think that reading does to people and why certain things that are going to be read should be removed or restricted from somebody. For that work, what I do is I interview challengers and I go to hearings or watch videotapes of hearings on books that are challenged. And I also do Freedom of Information Act requests from the institutions to get as much documentation of the challenge as possible.
James LaRue, let's bring you back in here. You know a thing or two about banning and challenging. Talk to us a little bit about your definitions of the differences and maybe talk about why that's significant.
I absolutely share Emily's interest in this. And when I started, I think I had hit 150 challenges when I was the director of the library. And I said, what is going on here? And why are people so exercised about some of these issues? Because on the face of it, if you say, okay, well, if I have a viewpoint or if I read a book, it doesn't change my behavior overnight. I've read a lot of mysteries in my life, and I've yet to kill anybody. You know, I've read a cookbook once, but I didn't cook anything out of it, you know. So just reading something doesn't change your behavior. But then I noticed that the pattern fell into one of two categories, is 99% of the challenges that I got were coming from parents of children between the ages of 4 and 6, or 14 and 16. And then I realized that it's not just about a religious versus secular or liberal versus conservative. It really was about this moment in parenthood where you say, I am losing control of my child's environment. And between the ages of 4 and 6, you know, suddenly that protective cocoon is breaking down because your child is going to daycare or going to play dates or is going to preschool. And so now you don't have the same control over their environment. And it's about love and loss and grief. You want your baby back. And between 14 and 16, of course, it's the second loss of innocence. It's the end of childhood and the beginning of adulthood. And so I think that often what happens is the parent sees this kind of moment where I'm about to lose something and they want to protect you and surround you in this kind of gloss of innocence, not really recognizing that innocence doesn't protect you from the dangers of the world. The world is still out there, and reading about it is often your very best defense to get ready for it.
Let's say, then, that a book is challenged. For example, let's play devil's advocate in this case. If someone says, well, is the book really banned? Or someone's challenging it, or is it taken off the shelf, so to speak? Emily Knox, do you want to address that concern?
This actually comes up a lot, and I actually have a paper that I wrote about this, about the differences between broad definitions of censorship and narrow definitions of censorship. So if someone says the book is taken off the shelf, that it's not really banned, this is a narrow definition of censorship, right? That because you can get it somewhere else, that the book hasn't been banned. But in fact, what you're doing is you're impeding access to the book, right? Why else would you ask for someone to remove a book if you didn't feel that by removing it, you would be impeding access? And I think it's important to always remember that that's actually the goal of a challenge, is to in some way prescribe how a particular book should be used. And what libraries are in is in the business of access and providing as much access as possible. And so if someone says that, well, we're just taking it off the book, off the shelf, what I talk about in my book is that actually this is a symbolic act in many ways, right? It's trying to say, this is the kind of community that we have. This is the kind of library that should represent our community in a particular way. So I think it's easier to see it as not so much, well, no one can ever see this book again, but what is the person trying to say about the institution of the library and the community in which they live.
Well, it's almost like community policing or something.
And I think it's a state of identity. It's like we believe this, when often it isn't a majority view. It's just a very loud view.
Emily, you wanted to say?
I think community policing is one way to see it, but also it's also a measure of thinking about, we're a society that's going through so many changes at the moment, and one thing that people feel that they can have control over is their local institutions. And one of those local institutions is the library, whether the public library, the school library. And this is a way of saying, well, I'm kind of putting my foot down here, and I'm actually going to take a stand about what we think our community should look like.
So, James LaRue, this, of course, then looks different regionally. And, you know, many of us live in, you know, urban metropolitan environments where, you know, there's a lot of diversity. But, of course, not everyone lives in a very diverse area. So how do you see some differences there? Or do you see differences in seeing challenges or bans taking place in different places, or suburban or maybe even rural places?
I kind of wanted to talk a little bit about that notion about whether or not a book is banned. And I was talking to a reporter here recently who was saying that in her little town in Nevada, if they remove a book from a school library, you say, well, is it really banned? You say, well, how close is your nearest bookstore? And it turns out it was 80 miles away, and there was no public library in this very small community. And she said, oh, but it's available on Amazon. And say, well, how many teenagers who are grappling with issues about, you know, sexual identity have a credit card and can go to Amazon and order the book? So I think sometimes in the more rural areas, the banning of a book from an institution, in fact, bans it from an entire community. But don't think that censorship only happens in rural areas. In fact, we see it happening in very large cities. Most often lately, it seems like there's a new kind of challenge that's happening in schools, very much targeting schools. And here the idea is, if this book is going to disturb my child, meaning it has sexual content, Toni Morrison's Beloved, there's are rape scenes in it. Well, I don't want my child, who is 17 years old and will be able to marry and vote and go to war the next year, I don't want them to know about this. And so you should notify the parents that there might be disturbing content in this book so we can give them an alternative book to read.
Well, James LaRue, I'm glad you brought that up. I'm actually very interested in hearing what you and Emily Knox have to say about this. This sort of been going on just kind of in a broader conversation going on, not just in higher education, but culturally in the United States, about trigger warnings.
Could
you talk a little bit about that, Emily Knox?
Well, I'm actually editing a book for Roman Littlefield about trigger warnings. Mm-hmm. It should be out in the spring. I think trigger warnings are very difficult to really get a handle on. There are many people who feel that if you don't put a trigger warning before a book, that in fact you don't care about your students, right? They can be seen like as a way of, I heard someone recently say, you know, a way of signaling that you are understanding of a particular way, particular aspect of society and thinking about people who deal with trauma. My main concern about trigger warnings actually relates to diverse books. My main fear is that, in fact, trigger warnings will be assigned to books about people from diverse populations because, in fact, those populations tend to have more trauma in them. And I think Beloved is an excellent example of this, right? It is a very violent book, but is it a book that deserves a trigger warning? It's a book about slavery in the United States, the effects of that. Mm-hmm. It's not that the book is not traumatic. It's just my fear with trigger warnings is that, in fact, these are the books that will have them more than books about, say, the majority population, however that's defined. In my book that's coming out in the spring, people take all different points of view on trigger warnings, from either having them or not having them institutionally required or not.
Well, that's another can of worms there. If they're mandated, yep, that's a very different situation. And if you take a look, of course, at people like Greg Lukianoff at the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education, who kind of was part of sparking this more recent debate in the last year with the Atlantic article. And then, of course, James LaRue, the University of Chicago's. Can you comment on that?
Yeah, you know, and I, much like Emily, I find quite a diversity of opinion about trigger warnings. If I talk to my own daughter about this, she says, hey, you know, this is not an attempt to censor. This is an attempt to say that there really are people who have suffered post-traumatic stress, And you're not saying we're not going to talk about it. We're just going to give you a moment before I talk about a difficult scene to say this is going to feature something that we know could trigger a post-traumatic thing. So it is I'm showing you a movie that's about, you know, violence that takes place that could trigger something that happened to you in Afghanistan. But the problem is that other people, and I think the University of Chicago took this tack too, is that, you know, how many things do we have to warn you about? Because if it's two things, if it's rape and war, you know, okay, you can say, I can understand that a good professor would say, we're going to talk about some things that may be difficult for some of you. Just take a breath, and
right.
Here we go.
Right.
But I've seen a list of trigger warnings that gets down to the point to say, well, there are people who are afraid of spiders. And now if I'm reading a short story, do I have to say there are spiders in this story? And that's how the American Library Association winds up saying that warning itself is a way to scare people away from the content. Well, if there's a warning label attached to it, then I shouldn't have to do it, right?
We're speaking with James LaRue. He's director of the American Library Association's Office for Intellectual Freedom. We're also speaking with Emily Knox, assistant professor in the School of Information Sciences at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, also author of Book Burning in 21st Century America, published by Roman and Littlefield. We're talking about Banned Books Week. This is the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff, and we will be back after this musical break. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff. This week on the Project Censored Show, we're talking about Banned Books Week taking place now. And we're joined by James LaRue. He's director of the American Library Association's Office for Intellectual Freedom. We're also joined by assistant professor in the School of Information Sciences at University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, Emily Knox. Emily Knox is also the author of Book Banning in 21st Century America. Emily, we were talking about trigger warnings, and it is a complicated and nuanced subject, and James LaRue was pointing that out and making some commentary about that. Could you build on that and talk a little bit more about this, especially given that you have a book coming out next year?
I would say that when it comes to the classroom, like if I have my students reading something that is difficult, I might say something like, be aware that there's something in here. You know, there are things in here that are violent. I just want you to know that. I don't know if I would use the word trigger warning or content warning for it. For librarians, what we worry about quite a bit is that labels are performative. So when you label something as a book that is violent or a book that is erotic or something like that, the book becomes that thing. This is something I'm constantly talking to my students about. This is also something that comes up with challenges. So you get people who say, well, this is a book for adults. This is a book for teenagers, as if these labels make the book become something. And so library and information science is always just a little wary of labeling things like this, because once you've done this performative act on a text, it's hard to think of it any other way. I mean, this is true of almost all media. Once you have said that it is this one thing, people are primed to think of it in a particular way. And that's one of the things I worry about with trigger warnings, that the texts themselves become a trigger, right? They no longer will have maybe resonance as literature or as art, because they've become triggers for someone if you put a trigger warning on it. There are many people who disagree with this, and that is what I hope will come up in my book. I'm not trying to put forward something that is definitive in the book. There are lots of different ideas coming through there.
Surely there are. And you're describing a little bit of what sounds like framing and the notion that you're potentially predisposing someone to a particular framed interpretation merely by highlighting something that is a potential trigger warning, even though you're missing potential broader interpretation or overall ways of thinking about a particular work, whether it's literature, art, even news for that matter.
Right. And this is when it comes up with challenges. So I just saw something on a Facebook group that talked about The Absolutely True Diary of a Part-Time Indian, which is a book that gets challenged all the time. And the person came up to the reference desk and said, well, this is a book for kids. I mean, like for young kids, because it has pictures in it, right? So this person was putting a frame and making this book for a particular subset of kids because of the way in which the author and illustrator chose to tell their story. And this is something that comes up with Absolutely True Diary of a Part-Time Indian quite a bit, that why should you read this as a teenager or as an adult, because it has pictures. And then, of course, this also goes to graphic novels, which was the focus for in BookSpeak last year, because when you think about, like, what is a graphic novel? How can those be for adults? There are a lot of people who would say, well, adults shouldn't read them, even though you have a graphic novel like most, which is definitely something that deals with adult topics.
James LaRue, I want to bring you back into the conversation here. The ALA's top 10 challenged books list, a lot of these fall under diverse content. You had mentioned that earlier. And a lot of the challenge works are often about people or issues that include LGBTQIA, people of color, gender diversity, ethnic, cultural, religious minorities, people with so-called disabilities. People are issues that perhaps challengers would prefer not to consider. So this is what we're getting at in terms of diverse content. But it's also an issue that there's a lack of diversity in library collections, is it not?
Well, that's true. So one of the things I've been looking at, so you start off and say 9 of these 10 titles are diverse content. And then you look at the publishing world and say, okay, so a big study came out by Lee and Loam, and they said that at this point, the vast percentage of publishing, about 90% by some estimates, and maybe 86% by others, is pretty much mainstream white Anglo-Saxon Protestant sort of lifestyles, right? Everybody's straight and white. So why haven't we seen much shift in mainstream publishing? And by mainstream publishing, I mean just the big 5 publishers who predominate the content that is advertised and pushed all throughout the commercial bookstores and the libraries around the nation. And they just haven't changed very much in terms of the people who are administering these programs. And at the same time, there's an extraordinary explosion of writing that's happening around the world, but particularly in America, of small, independent, and self-published content. And that content is diverse. So So one of the things that we started talking about the Office of Intellectual Freedom is that, is there a way for us to start looking and mining our own backyard a little better to identify these emerging voices who haven't gone through all the traditional gatekeeping to go through an agent, to go through an editor and go through a publisher and then have to be reviewed? People are going right to Amazon and publishing the book, and it gets out in a week, and it happens to reflect people's real lives, and it's immediately available, but it's not in our libraries. So this Our Voices effort, that we're calling it, is to try to find a way to find quality, diverse, local content produced in our neighborhood and get it into our libraries.
That sounds like an important initiative. Is this something that you're launching now?
Yes. In fact, we are launching it at this year's Banned Books Week.
So that's very, very timely. This sounds like a very important initiative. And certainly at Project Censored, we've noticed some of the same challenges in getting material out in timely fashion. Our publishers of Seven Stories Press, you know, independent publisher, 90% of media is controlled by about six corporations. Certainly, Certainly Seven Stories Press, not one of those. But, you know, again, that is part of the challenge, is sort of, you know, books take time to produce, it seems, if you're going through, you know, these kinds of channels, and there are new technologies where you are rightly saying there's a lot of diverse content coming out. It's just coming out in different places. Emily Knox, can you comment on that and your experience with that, with technology and diversity?
I definitely think that there is more written, more online. One of the things I've always been interested in is things like urban fiction and self-publishing of, well, it's euphemistically called urban fiction, and how people have more access to get their ideas published than they used to. And some of my stories are about people who have written a story and go out and get it printed up and then sell it out of the trunk of their car, you know, in their neighborhood, in the city. And my hope is that as we move to having lowering the barriers to publishing in general, that more voices will get out there. But I am also worried, when it comes to challenge books, that in fact we'll see more challenges because there won't be as many gatekeepers. And this is one of the arguments that challengers use anyway. They say, how did this get published? The publishers should be ashamed of themselves for letting this trash get out there. And so we don't quite know what will happen when libraries, say, take in thousands of books in a collection because they're all just available for download on your e-reader. And how will challenges happen because your kid is able to see not just one book, but, say, 50 books on a particular topic that might not have gone through the same selection process that's used in libraries right now. So we'll see how that goes.
James LaRue, we're going to be bringing this segment of the program to a close here momentarily, and then we'll be continuing with James Tager and Emily Knox. I believe you're going to stay on the program with us. But James LaRue, this is your first year at the ALA Office of Freedom as the director there. How has this year been going? And this is your first Banned Books Week as director of OIF.
The whole thing has been fascinating to me. This is Intellectual Freedom Central, and that means that all of the news reports and all, and everybody is constantly tracking and alert for all this, and so it's been thrilling to get thrown right into the heart of all of the debates of our society. So I'm having a wonderful time.
Indeed, I bet you are. And Project Censored is a proud sponsor, contributor to Banned
Yes.
Books Week for several years. And the work that you do at the American Library Association, the Office for Intellectual Freedom, Freedom to Read Foundation, we couldn't be more supportive of what's happening there. And we really hope that more and more people really pay more attention to this and go to bannedbooksweek.org to learn more that, yes, indeed, there are bans and there are challenges. And this year's theme of diversity is incredibly timely, given the many things taking place in the United States and around the world today. So, James LaRue, thank you so much for joining us on the Project Censored Show. Again, bannedbooksweek.org. You can also go to ala.org/offices/OIF to learn more about the American Library Association's Office for Intellectual Freedom. James LaRue, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Emily Knox, we're going to keep you on for the rest of the show. And after this musical break, we're going to be joined by James Tager. Please stay with us. Thank you. This is the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio, and today's theme is Banned Books Week. And this year's theme, Banned Books Week, is celebrating diversity. And if you go to the bannedbooksweek.org website, you can see a list of frequently challenged books with diverse content. And according to the Banned Books Week site, they say, while diversity is seldom given as a reason for a challenge, it seems, in fact, to be an underlying and unspoken factor. These challenged works are often about people and issues which include LGBTQIA, people of color, gender diversity, people with disabilities and ethnic, cultural, and religious minorities, people or issues that perhaps challengers would prefer not to consider. Among some of these titles, A Gathering of Old Men by Ernest Gaines, A Hero Ain't Nothing But a Sandwich by Alice Childress, A Lesson Before Dying by Ernest Gaines, Absolutely True Diary of a Part-Time Indian by Sherman Alexie, All American Boys by Jason Reynolds, Always Running by Luis Rodriguez, Am I Blue? Coming Out from the Silence by Marion Dane Bau, and Tango Makes Three by Justin Richardson and Peter Parnell, Anne Frank, The Diary of a Girl, still on the list of challenged and banned books. And another is Annie on My Mind by Nancy Garden. Later in the program, we'll read some other of these challenged books. And again, you're invited to go to bannedbooksweek.org. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff. This week, we're focusing on Banned Books Week. It's an annual celebration of the freedom to read. This year is between September 25th and October 1st. Hundreds of libraries, bookstores, schools, communities across the country host events that celebrate free and open access to all literature, even those considered unorthodox or unpopular. And this year, the National Coalition that is behind Banned Books Week is highlighting diversity. In the first part of the show today, we were joined by James LaRue, the director of the American Library Association, the Office for Intellectual Freedom. And now we are joined by James Tager. He is the program manager for PEN America's Free Expression Program, previously worked with the International Commission of Jurists Asia and Pacific Program. And before this, he was a Frederick Sheldon Traveling Fellow researching civil society responses to developing human rights framework within the Association of Southeast Asian Nations. And James holds a BA from Duke University, a JD from Harvard Law School, licensed to practice in the state of New York. James Tager, thanks for joining the Project Censored Show.
Thanks for having me.
And we are still joined by Emily Knox. Emily, a reminder to listeners, or if you're just tuning in, Emily Knox is assistant professor in the School of Information Sciences at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. Her recent book is called Book Banning in 21st Century America. So, James Tager, since you're just now joining us, we were talking before you came on about a history of Banned Books Week. We got into a little bit of the theme of this year's Banned Books Week, diversity. We also had talked about trigger warnings, a whole host of things. But let's just start with you. What's first and foremost on your mind for this year's Banned Books Week and the theme of diversity?
Oh, such a good question. Obviously, to begin with is the broad overview of this idea that it's diverse books that are disproportionately targeted to be challenged or banned. And I'm using the term diverse books to refer to books written by or featuring characters of color or of LGBT people or disabled. As we become more of a diverse society, especially as we have more and more children of color making up now, I believe, more than half of the kids in public schools in the United States, the necessity for books that highlight diverse experiences, diverse characters, and written by people of color, LGBT authors or others, becomes more and more important. And we have a report, PEN America is putting out a report to coincide with Banned Book Week called Missing from the Shelf. And what's on my mind now is the idea that we'll have cases that will explode into the public consciousness about banned books or challenged books. And there will be rightfully a big outcry over the concept of banned books. What troubles me particularly is those stories that don't reach the public consciousness, books that are banned or challenged in an informal way where it never reaches the news, where people never hear about it, and thus there never gets to be that backlash against censorship that's so useful for getting out the word that book banning and book challenges is still a thing.
Well, indeed, it is a thing, and that's a good point to bring up, because I know in classrooms we talk a little bit about Banned Books Week, or I talk about censorship, and often people say censorship in America, banned books in America, and of course it actually is a big thing here. Mm-hmm. It's just that I think people are predisposed maybe to not think about these things, or certainly with this year's Banned Books Week theme, people that either have some lack of familiarity or issues with themes of diversity, they may tend not to pay attention to them, or are just wholly unaware that there are viewpoints that have a really hard time getting the light of day or getting a fair hearing. And Emily Knott, let's bring you back into the conversation and let's talk about some of those kinds of challenges, or perhaps let's spin this on its head instead of just focusing on the challenges. Maybe talk about what are some things that we can all do to resist challenges in the banning of books, and ways that we can really get people to open up to the themes of diversity.
So there's a couple things to talk about with this. One thing is self-censorship. So in libraries, something I'm going to be looking at with the Illinois Library Association is whether or not are librarians engaging in self-censorship? Do you ever think about not getting something because you are worried that it will cause controversy in your community? And what do you do to mitigate that if you are engaging in that? The other thing that comes up are, I always encourage all of my students to have really good policies. So it is true that sometimes these never reach the light of day, but my hope is that, and sometimes that happens because, in fact, the challenge has been stopped at the desk. That's what I call it. So if someone comes up with a concern, and actually following from Jamie LaRue's book on this, An Inquisition, that you're able to find someone a book that they would like better. It is a problem, though, if it's just kind of hushed up and the book is just kind of moved. And how do we make sure that doesn't happen? Well, one way to do that is to make sure that there's support from the community. If you hear that this is happening in your community, it's really important to let the staff, the director, know that you support them. And I would say even if it's a book that you don't necessarily like yourself, this often comes up with the books called TTYL. They are all based on kids' text speak. A lot of people dislike these books, but they're very important for a lot of young adults and teenagers, and they're often challenged. And I would say that for the institutions that are going through these challenges, knowing that there are people out there to support you really can make a difference for how much anxiety and stress you have while you're going through this challenge. And also getting kids' voices involved. So in my research, as I mentioned before, I often go to hearings or watch videos of hearings that happen. And there's nothing more powerful than hearing the voices of kids who have been touched by these different books that they've read. Often their testimony in front of the board can really make a difference. And I can't stress that enough, to really get people on your side and just show up. If there's going to be a hearing, show up and support the school or public library.
James Tager, let's bring you here. What are your thoughts on some things that we can do to push back, not just push back maybe in a combative way, but push back in a didactic way?
I think one thing that I'm proud to say PEN America's report focuses on and that is relevant is the publishing industry and the role they play in making sure that books with diverse viewpoints, featuring diverse characters, and written by diverse authors, including authors of color, LGBTQ authors, that they reach publication in the first place. So one way we can kind of push back against the idea of censorship of diversity is to make sure that these books are available in the first place, to send the message to publishers that these are the types of books we're interested in reading. One of the most interesting things we found for the research for our report is both at the distribution point and at the publication point, people would push back against diverse books or books by diverse authors by saying, well, we don't really find this relevant to our own experiences. We can't relate, both in terms of librarians and school teachers saying, well, our kids won't be able to relate, and also kind of editors saying, well, we're not sure we're going to publish this book because we can't relate. We spoke to Daniel Jose Alder, the author, about his experiences, and he told us a story where he said people told him that, well, we can't relate to your character. We think it's great writing, but we can't relate to your character. And he said, well, my character is a 16-year-old woman of color, and you're a 30-year-old white woman. You're not supposed to relate. So we have to kind of push this idea that we don't have to relate personally to a book in the sense that we don't have to believe that we can picture ourselves looking in the mirror and seeing the characters in order to find that book to be a valuable one.
We're speaking with James Tager. He is program manager for PEN America's Free Expression Program. Also, we've been joined for the hour by Emily Knox, author most recently of Book Banning in 21st Century America. The theme of today's show has been Banned Books Week, and we will continue our conversation for the last segment of the Project Censored show today after this musical break. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. We're continuing a conversation today about Banned Books Week. We're joined by James Tager, the program manager for PEN America's Free Expression Program, and Emily Knox, who is an assistant professor in the School of Information Sciences at University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, author of Book Banning in 21st Century America. Emily Knox, you wanted to say something more about diverse books. Please do.
I always think that the idea that somehow, as James mentioned, that you have to relate to a book in order for it to be something that you should, you know, publish or that you should buy is very interesting, because for so many years, those of us who are people of color are always expected to read about white people, or if you're LGBTQIA, you're supposed to read, if you were only reading about people who are heterosexual, So the relationship seems to only want to go in one direction, right? And the idea that, well, I don't want to read this because, or I don't want to publish this because it's not related to me. I mean, this is really, I know people dislike the word privilege, but of course this is the ultimate privilege that somehow, even in your literature, that the world is supposed to be reflective of you. And this has never been true for people who are part of diverse populations, right? We've never said that the world of literature should be reflective of us. And it's interesting to see how much pushback there has been about this changing literary landscape to actually match much more what our country looks like.
Indeed. And James Tager, let's talk a little bit more about this Penn Report on bannedbooksweek.org. You know, right up front, the Association of American Publishers has a little bit of information about the kind of books that are banned, and it talks about some statistics between 1994 and 2012. 37% of the U.S. population are people of color, but only 10% of books published focus on multicultural content. Over half of books challenged or banned in the past decade have diverse content. Of course, these are troubling kinds of statistics in terms of equity, but talk to us a little bit more about the Penn Report and how it addresses some of this.
Absolutely. I want to start, before I jump into that, by just affirming everything that Emily said. And I think also in terms of how we expect readers and children to relate to books, it's also important to point out that when we kind of try to categorize children as relating to books only with characters that might physically look like them or might have the same life experiences, we forget that kids, like anyone else, can think thematically and can relate to a character who's going through something similar, experiencing similar thematic issues, regardless of kind of whether they identify with the gender or the sexual orientation or gender identity or the racial background of the character. So I just want to kind of affirm and elaborate on that. But in terms of our report, which, again, if you'll forgive the shameless plugging, you can find at www.penn.org.
No, this is why we're here. We're here to spread the word and get people finding out. So please repeat that.
www.penn.org. The report is called Missing from the Shelf. And we talk not only about the concept of lack of diversity in book challenges in children's literature, but also the idea of looking at the publishing industry and how we need to encourage them to publish more diverse works. And, one thing that stands out to me is this idea that the publishing industry is considered this passion industry. And you get into it because you have a passion for the writing. And, of course, there are kind of systemic norms where editors may privilege certain books that they see as kind of more in their wheelhouse. And, unfortunately, that ties into this idea that experiences they've had in their own life and their own privileges to use the same concept that Emily was saying is something we need to make sure is in here, is something that affects their choices for what books they publish. We also want to talk about the idea that more and more we're having a conversation about how the need for diverse books affects our conceptions of books today that have offensive representations of people of color. And at Penn America, we're a big believer in the idea that if there's bad speech or offensive speech, or in this situation, books that have, offensive representations of people of color, that a way to deal with that is more speech, to ensure that there's, loud voices pointing out exactly what's wrong and having a conversation about that. That's kind of what the report walks us through. But as you affirmed and as our report affirms, unfortunately, nowadays, many of the book challenges, the majority of the book challenges focus on challenging books written by or having characters of color or LGBTQ or disabled. And that's something that I think we at Penn think is deeply troubling, and I think the average person should find deeply troubling.
So, Emily Knox, I wanted to remind listeners also, Emily, people can learn more about you and your work at emilyknox.net. That's Emily, KNOX.net. But Emily, could you add to what James was talking about? In terms of, let's go back to the banned books week theme of diversity and the really the significance of what it really means to be having books. We've seen the statistics that there are few books that get to the libraries and shelves that are about diversity, yet they seem to be the books that are even more and more challenged. So this is certainly a challenge for trying to create an educated multicultural society.
So what I found in my research is that, in fact, the way the book challenges work is that they follow whatever problems are happening in society. One of the most interesting things that one of my challengers told me was that, you know, this book is no Catcher in the Rye, which is a book, of course, that was challenged and banned for many, many years. But the rise of, and I think we'll continue to see the rise of challenges to diverse books because of the changes we're seeing in society. So we're expected to be a minority country in 2040. Books and literature help us understand what is going on in our own world. And as we see more and more books about diverse populations get published or just are available in general, it's actually just not even surprising that these are the books that people are challenging. Because, of course, this is a difficult topic. The societal change is always difficult. How do you wrestle with that? And as I mentioned earlier, you know, this is a way of wrestling with it in your immediate community, within your own public library, your own school library, your own bookstore. And I think that expecting this to go away soon is just not actually realistic.
Oh, no.
This happen more and more and more.
And Emily Knox, I'm glad that you remind us, as you did earlier, that this is a very local issue, and it's important for people to be paying attention and supporting the community's right to read.
Yes, absolutely.
So, James Tager, a list this year of some of the top books: A Gathering of Old Men, Ernest J. Gaines, mm-hmm. A Hero Ain't Nothing But a Sandwich, Alice mm-hmm. Childress, another Gaines book, A Lesson Before Dying. There's Absolutely True Diary of a Part-Time Indian, Sherman Alexie, right? That's still there.
Yeah, still stands strong.
Okay, well, we're going to have to wrap up the segment here, but I just wanted to see, could you talk a little, just very briefly about, you know, maybe a title two here, or at least some of the consistency about what's happening? And some of these books end up on the list year after year.
Yep. Well, in a way that can wrap up but also follow on what was just said, you know, there's this idea that these are issues that make people uncomfortable, issues of kind of racial history. For example, Toni Morrison's Beloved, which was challenged in Virginia, and quite literally the son of the challenger who had read the book said he found the book gross. And you can interpret that to mean, well, I was uncomfortable with the book's material. And a lot of these books are things that deal with themes that make people uncomfortable or discomfited. But they make people uncomfortable precisely because they're things we have to spend a lot of time thinking about, and they illuminate some of the fault lines and some of the major issues in society today. And when you challenge a book or attempt to ban a book that deals with these issues, in essence, on one level, you're saying, well, we don't want to discuss these issues. We don't want to bring them into the public forum, and we don't want to bring them before our children to discuss. And I think PEN America and I think the National Coalition Against Censorship and others, you know, we just disagree with that approach fundamentally.
Indeed. And we certainly do at Project Censored, where this is the voice of James Tager, Free Expression Program Manager, PEN America, PEN.org. We've also been joined by Emily Knox, author of Book Banning in 21st Century America. You can learn more at emilyknox.net. You can go and learn more about Banned Books Week also at bannedbooksweek.org. I'd like to thank all of our guests for joining us today, and I'm afraid we're out of time, but would also like to remind our listeners that we should think about Banned Books Week every week, not just once a year, as we champion the right to free expression and the right to know. James Tager, Emily Knox, thank you so much for your time on the Project
thank
Censored
you.
Show today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff. The focus today is Banned Books Week, and I would like to continue sharing with everyone some more of the books that are commonly challenged or banned, according to the Banned Books Week site. Autobiography of Malcolm X, Alex Haley. Baby Bebop by Francisca Leah Block. Beloved by Toni Morrison. Beyond Magenta, Transgender Teens Speak Out by Susan Coughlin. Black Boy by Richard Wright. Bless Me, Utima by Rodolfo A. Anaya. Color of Earth by Kim Dong-hwa. Daddy's Roommate by Michael Wilhot. Drama by Raina Telgemeier. Fallen Angels by Walter Dean Myers. There are many of these books, and there is a long list of them available, over 50, in fact, and the source for this was the American Library Association's Office for Intellectual Freedom. For more of that information, you can visit bannedbooksweek.org.
Supporting human conditions, not free market propaganda and corrupt politicians, cause they own by special interest groups that fund their campaign. That's why you hear the same old things they claim, but change never came. It's a dirty game maintained by rain for capital gain, but my people getting tired of the pain and the shame.
And that wraps up another Project Censored show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff, your host. Our show today has been about Banned Books Week. We give thanks to Anthony Fest, our producer. Erica Bridgman is our engineer. The Project Censored Show airs on 35 stations around the United States, from Maui to New York. Please visit Facebook and follow our activities. Also, learn more about Project Censored online at projectcensored.org. We'll see you next time.
Political ties, habitual eyes, alibis, disguise under the guise of democracy, politics, and the apocalypse. Got the skies looking ominous. So the ocean burn bright with waves full of poison. Genocide, wars, far for little poison. The weapons manufactured paid for by attacks upon the bridges and the levees and the mines collapsing. All the prisons, build the capacity, citizens. And the ties for the master thief, combine and conquer, steal a masterpiece. Open your eyes and realize what's happening. Time's running out to reach all potential. If you ain't at the table, then you're probably on the menu. We got that love.